My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. My guest this week is Christina Littleson, a writer, producer working out of the UK, and trust me when I say this, we have a ton to talk about. So, without further ado, here's the interview. Christina Littleson, writer, producer, thank you for coming to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, are you kidding me? I reached out all the way to Glasgow, and as we spoke earlier, people are going to think I have an affinity for people in Glasgow, which I do. Because I was born there and I'm allowed and it's my show. So there, thank you for being here. And I'd like you to go over, some of the, you know, the work that you've done and let people know, who you are and what you've been doing.
Okay. So I won't go back to, I've made quite a few shorts, some great, some not great.
Haven't we all?
But more recent films, I've done obviously the feature film that I spoke to you about, Cleek, mm-hmm. Which I produced and helped with some of the writing, and that was a great experience. I've got the feature film Cleek, but I also have just completed a couple of shorts, which was Killing Me Softly, which is just one that I've not really spoke about, but I had a couple of well-known actors. We were very, very lucky. It kind of is about euthanasia, but it's more about the fallout.
Yeah.
So that's in post-production right now.
Wow.
And we'll go to festivals, but we did have a couple of sort of better known actors in that, so, and that did have a bit of a budget, so
wow.
That's just passed. Also, I last year done Postcard from the Apocalypse, which is the first sci-fi I've done. Sci-fi is something I've never really tried before, but yeah. Sci-fi. It was great. It was a great experience.
Was it a good time?
I think mainly because the writer-director was my friend.
Oh.
Greg, who'd asked me to come aboard, and we've worked together before and we get on really well. So.
Oh, that makes it even better, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I'm also in production right now of a 6-part drama called One Night in Flanders, which is a World War I drama based on true events.
Wow.
So that's a 6-part drama and that is in production right now. It had to be halted for a while because the Glasgow City Council shut us down because we had war trenches, you know, like an actual site.
Yeah.
They want to build a bit of a motorway over our site. I know. But they shut us down at the same time that they were opening up a site just up the road, an exact same site for Steven Spielberg, shut us down and opened him up.
Well,
that shows where the money is.
Yeah, you know, it's Spielberg. What are you going to do, right? What a pain in the ass.
I know.
Did you do writing on Postcard from the Apocalypse at all? Did you do any of the writing? No?
No.
Because I'm like you. I'm not. I like sci-fi. Don't get me wrong. I've never attempted sci-fi. Either writing or in any other form.
That's the two things that I've never made an attempt at, sci-fi or comedy.
Oh, don't talk comedy. I think that's the hardest thing to do.
I would love to be able to write comedy, but I just don't think I can. And it's not that I don't have a sense of humour. I just don't think I'm a very strong comedy writer.
You know, it's a difficult thing to do, to write bits and jokes and make something funny. It's hard.
I have a friend who's a comedy writer and she is fantastic. I mean,
really?
She gets obviously a lot. In fact, there's two of them. We have a comedy troupe here called What's Her Face? I know that sounds funny, but it's an all-female comedy troupe and she writes for them and her writing's fantastic.
Wow.
She writes comedy well, but I can't do it.
Wow. You know what? It is one of those things that you'd really have to work at and it would have to be a passion for you, right? Like it would have to be the thing that you really want to do. And speaking of writing, let's talk about your writing, if you don't mind. Okay. So when did you start writing? And more importantly, what kind of things did you write?
So I think I've always written. I mean, even like when I was younger and stuff, I've always had books with writing in it. I've always written stuff. But I also took the route that my family and everything thought I should take, and I went and ran a business and done the whole 9 to 5. But even then, I would sit in the office and I would have books of writing in the office. I mean, then it wasn't so much. We didn't have the technology we have now. We had typewriters.
Right.
So I'm kind of, no, as young now as I used to be. But we had typewriters and that kind of thing. So I would have a typewriter. I would have loads of stuff that I'd written, but done nothing with it.
Yeah.
And then went to uni after I left my job.
Right.
Went to uni and studied screenwriting.
Really?
Yeah.
What university was that?
Strathclyde.
Strathclyde. Let's shout out to Strathclyde.
That was a big step for me, I think, because at that point I had a wee baby and,
wow,
you know, I know. So I went to uni and I studied screenwriting, and that's when I properly started screenwriting.
Wow.
As I decided that's what I was going to do. Rather than go back into business, I was going to write.
Yeah.
And have you? Yes, a lot. I've written a lot. I think mostly I write thriller or historical fiction.
Or really?
In fact, I've just written sort of a 6-part drama that is historical, but it's based on facts. But it is loosely based on facts. Now it's come away from the actual facts a wee bit to add to the drama, but you know, it is based on sort of real events.
Hey, if it's based on. Yeah, poetic license.
Well, the thing is, it was based on sort of something that was supposedly supernatural. I'm a bit of a skeptic. So rather than write the whole supernatural thing, I've actually written it for the court's point of view and the witnesses and, you know, the sort of legal point of view.
Yeah. So what exactly is this paranormal thing that happened?
It was witch trials in Scotland, and it was one of the last witch trials in Scotland. And basically, they were gossiping about each other, and if they didn't like somebody, they blamed them for being a witch and whatever. Yeah. But there was a big trial, and 7 people were convicted and sentenced to death. But rather than write about the whole paranormal side of it, I've written about the court trial and how religious they were, and, you know, I've tried to keep away from the actual just paranormal, supernatural thing.
So you decided to go from a whole new perspective. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's good because I've been able to go and see the sites, you know, where they actually burnt them, and, you know, I actually live not far from the site where the last witch burnings happened. So
man. Talk about history. Wow.
But yeah, that's the kind of thing I like to write about.
Was that the fact that you were so close to that particular historical site? Did that give you the courage to go in depth into this kind of historical drama?
It kind of did. There was a thing in the newspaper a few years ago. What they've done is they've put a horseshoe in the ground where the last witches were burnt to stop the whole supernatural thing again. It's to stop the bad luck, the escaping and stuff. But I know it turns out that the horseshoe had come up out of the ground because of all the traffic, and a wee girl had found it and held it in locally. And I'd read about it in the newspaper, and I was like, that's interesting that she's found that. And, you know, that made me look at the whole story, and that's where it came from.
Well, you know what? So let's look at that then. So, you know, you wrote this as a script, right? This is a screenplay?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
It's 6 parts.
Six parts?
6 40-minute episodes. I don't think I quite knew what I was getting. I think at first I was like, I would like to write something, but I don't really think I knew just how much I was getting into.
Holy mackerel, 40 minutes each. That's a lot of writing. You are a writer. You are committed.
I've been writing it for a while. I've been writing it since last year.
Okay, so tell me something. Have you done all 6 parts? Are you just partially done? You've done the whole thing.
Yeah, I've done the whole 6 parts, but what I've done was they are really spew drafts.
Right.
Not so much the first episode. The other 5 episodes really are just me thrown up on a page.
Right.
But the first episode, I then went to a BAFTA event.
Yeah.
And there was a writer there who'd just been commissioned, and, you know, she'd 6 parts of her drama going out on TV. And she was saying to me, don't focus on the other 5. Make the first one perfect.
Right.
And when the first one's perfect, then you can pitch that,
right,
and then you can work on the other 5. And so I've kind of just gone back and just worked on that first one since the first
episode. Well, it's a good piece of advice, isn't it? And have you been able to pitch it yet?
No, I think
No.
that's more of a confidence thing right now.
Really?
Yeah, I think for a while I put it to one side because I think I had to go back. I had to take a break for it because I was so involved with
Right.
it. I really was like, I knew the people as though they were real people, and you know, my whole life was kind of
Oh my
so
God.
involved in that. So I've had to walk away from it for a while. But today I actually picked it back up and I've looked at it and I've started going over it again.
Wow.
And so now I'm kind of at a point where I'm thinking about this is when I'll probably be ready to pitch.
Oh, good for you.
So
Good for you.
yeah,
So that
we'll just
means
do the
that.
first episode with maybe five treatments.
Right. Oh, I see what you mean. So you'd show the first episode, but then you would just give an idea of what the remaining episodes would be.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That is a lot of writing. Seriously, it's 40 pages a piece. Like wow, that's commitment, man. So
Yeah.
are you a big outliner when you wrote this? Did
I am.
you yeah, you
I'm
went
an
deep
outliner.
into it. You went into the rabbit hole, didn't you? You couldn't come
Yeah.
out.
I don't. I'm not. I used to sort of just write it down. Like, I'd be like, just write it. It's fine. But I think I like an outline first. I think I like to outline it first and then work on it. That's sort of more.
It
And I
does
like
give you a
pictures.
guide, doesn't it?
Yeah. I like to know my characters really well as well. I like to have sort of a wee page for each character where I know everything about them and what they do in a certain situation and stuff.
You know what? Well, think about it. If you are writing and you've put this deep character aside, and you know everything about that character, so when you're writing, you don't have to think about how they'd react. You know how they're going to react
I like
because
that,
you've
and I.
done all that, right?
Yeah, and I like that. I like to know how my character would behave in a certain situation, or
Right.
I like to know that about each of my main characters. So I do sort of really work on the characters as well.
Well, you know, I think about it this way that you know, it's like an iceberg. There's this tip of the iceberg that you see, which is the character that ends up on the page, and there's all this stuff underneath that you don't really see, but it still affects the character and how they act to things, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I like to know that. And I
You
think
spend a lot of time on it?
I spend quite a bit of time on the characters. I
Oh,
mean,
wow.
I wouldn't spend that much time that I was putting everything else off.
Right,
But
right.
yeah, I do like to know my characters.
So you know when you've got enough information, you don't hang on to it and keep going and keep going and keep going. And there's a point at where you say, okay, I know this character, now I'm moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would walk away and say, right, I know that character now. I know what they do. I know who they are, and
Right.
it's time to move on. And I'm happy with that.
Wow. You know, well, and again, for anybody out there who isn't writing out, you know, these character bios, it's a great thing to do, because it does inform the character when you know what the character's going to do based on that bio. So
Yeah,
it's a
absolutely.
great thing to do. So listen to Christina, do what Christina does.
I think as well when you're trying to pitch something, it helps to know the characters as well when you're trying to pitch something.
Oh yeah, you
And
know,
if
I
they
never
ask you
even
about the
thought
characters
about
and
that.
stuff, that is good for you to know what you're talking about there as well, I think.
Well, and if you're pitching it, a lot of people see, I don't know about you, but when I'm writing stuff, I don't like to think ahead to when it's finished and who's going to play the role. And sometimes I'll put a vision of a face to a character
Yeah.
or a particular person, but it's not like, oh, I'm going to write this for George Clooney. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? But
Yeah,
when you
that.
pitch it, that's what they're thinking. Okay, so
Yeah.
I've got this historical drama. Who can I get to play in it? Who will direct it? Who, you know, like all that stuff is churning in their head. And if you can give them, like you said, if you can give them a deep character bio, they're gonna, that makes their job easier.
Yeah, and I
Wow.
think I definitely like to have that info if I go and pitch. I guess I like to know that stuff.
What stuff do you put into a pitch? Or have you even thought about that yet?
Not so much for this.
Yeah.
I have pitched before, and I'm such a nervous wreck until I get in the door, and
Okay.
then I don't have a choice. I mean, I'm there. I know what I'm there for, but up until that point when I'm pitching, I'm a worrier. I'm like, oh my God, what if they hate it? What if, you know, I have so much doubt. And then I get in the door and I think, this is the chance. I've got one chance at this. I'm going to pitch it. That's it.
Yeah.
And they'll either like it or they'll hate it. I've done as much as I can.
Exactly. You know what? It's like my very Scottish parents used to say, you won't get to jail for asking. You know, the worst thing that can happen is they say no.
Exactly.
And then you just go on to something else, right? You just go on and find some other people to pitch to.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly.
And that's what you're probably thinking about when you get in the room. It's like, it's going to happen or it's not, but I'm going to do this and that's it.
Until that very second, though.
Are you a nervous wreck?
Like, oh my God. Yeah, I'm such a nervous wreck. And then, actually, I pitched a while back with my friend. We were pitching together on something we'd done together.
Yeah.
And it was BBC in Scotland. And the whole way there, I was nervous. And then we went and we pitched. Pitch was fine. We came back out. And then when we got in the elevator, I actually went, yes. And it was just like that whole thing. And he's laughing at me because he was like, you know, you've held all that in that time. And as soon as the elevator doors shut, I was like, oh.
Yeah. this big release. Oh, yeah. The stress is gone.
Done my bit.
Well, listen, as far as when you're writing, like this historical drama, are you a structure hound like I am? Or are you, like, I do a three-act structure. I'm really, and people are, you know, they say to me, you don't have to do that anymore. It's non-structure, apparently, that you can just, you know, go with the flow and these plot points happen where they happen. But I'm a real structure hound. What are you like as
a
writer?
I like structure. I like some structure. I mean, I think it helps. I think it helps you as a writer, you know, sort of where you're at as a writer and your script and stuff. I think I like a structure. I like a three-act structure.
Right.
And be able to stick to that and know where I am in my writing.
Yeah. Listen, I'm the same way because it's like, you know, when I get to a particular point in the script, I know, okay, well, I'm going to be jumping into the second act now. And I, you know, like I like having that.
It's timing. Yeah, I like that. I like to be able to time where I'm at.
It makes sense to us. I don't know if it makes sense to everybody, but I'm a structure hound. I just wonder what it was like for you.
I do like a bit of structure. I think I am I'm a planner, I think. Yeah. I think that comes to business, actually. You know, for being in business and then coming over into writing, I think I'm a planner. So I think I like structure. I like outlining. I like structure. I like character bios. And I think I have all that so that it helps with my writing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think it says that everybody's different. Right. I mean, not everybody's going to like what we like, but I'm exactly like you. I do the same thing. I'm a structure hound. I need to have those bios. I need to know where I'm going. I need a guide. And again, it's a guide. It's not carved in stone. You can change your outline. Ooh, it drives me crazy.
I change my outline, and I don't always stick rigidly to the structure or whatever. But if it's there, then it helps me. It's a guide for me, I guess, more so.
Sure. It just gives you direction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It gives me a sort of a plan for what I want to do.
Keeps you moving forward. Hey, listen, are there any books on writing that inspired you or that you learned from that you might be able to share with us?
Not so much. I wouldn't say books. I guess Save the Cat. I guess you probably everybody say Save the Cat just because it's been helpful. I've had a few screenwriting books. I think Better is just Save the Cat is told for stuff he's learned,
right?
And you know, he's sharing, so I guess I like Save the Cat in that sense. But I think actually more so than reading books, I've learned just for doing, just for writing, just for speaking to other people, you know, getting involved with other screenwriters, rather more so than writing a book, but I think for, like I was saying, I've learned sort of more outside the university than I learned in university.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same. I've learned more outside the books than I've learned in books.
Oh, wow.
But I actually ran the Scottish Screenwriters Organisation for quite a number of years.
Wow.
Until last June. I actually left last June and I was kind of like, what am I going to do? Should I leave? Should I stay? What if I miss everybody? But I still see everybody. But I was just trying to juggle everything. And there's like 60 people at every meeting of Scottish screenwriters and stuff, and there's quite a number of online members, and you know, you're having to organise everything. So
holy mackerel,
it was definitely time to hand it over. Definitely.
Wow.
It's a good organisation, but it was time to hand it over. But I think I've learned more sort of for the people there and, you know, being involved with that and reading other people's scripts, having them read mine, you know, that kind of thing than ever. Yeah. Book.
That's so amazing.
But it's, it's a good organisation.
Well, I mean, we should all get out there and talk to people and, you know, because you're right. And you learn from other people. And that's part of this podcast is learning from other people. Yeah. People are going to learn from
and
you.
I think that's good, it's better to learn from others.
Okay, well, speaking of advice, can you what advice would you give a first-time writer?
Right, definitely just write. Even if you think it's rubbish, get it done on paper. Just get it down. I call it like your spew draft. But just put it out. Just if you have an idea in your head, put it out. And don't try and write as well. Like I have a thing where I have hundreds of ideas at once.
Yeah.
Keep a notebook and write some of them in the notebook. But you don't have to work on all of them right now. They can be saved for later. But stick with one thing and write it down. Just it doesn't matter what it sounds like when it's down. You can edit that. You can just get it down. That would be my advice. And I think a thing with me in the beginning as well was lack of confidence. But do you know what? It's fine. If you're writing and you can get it down there and no worry about the first draft, then it's fine. You can go back and edit it.
Yeah. So did that help with your confidence when you just kept writing and writing and writing and writing and learning and learning and learning? It must have made you more confident about your writing.
Yeah. I mean, that's took a while. It's taken a really long time. I think before I couldn't even get the first draft down because I'd be so worried about, oh my God, what have I done? What, you know, and it takes a long time. I have some really good friends that will say to me, get it done. get in. You need that. You need sort of friends pushing you. It's another bit of advice I would probably give a first-time writer. Have a group of people that you can trust to read your writing. It doesn't necessarily have to be your mum or your dad or whatever. What it has to be is people that will be completely honest. I have some friends who, if my writing is rubbish, they will say, that's rubbish, this is what you can do to fix it.
Right.
But if it's great, they'll say it's great. So yeah. I trust them to say it's great because I know if it wasn't good, they would tell me it wasn't good.
Yeah, but here's the important thing too, is that they're not just saying this is rubbish. They're saying here's how you could fix it. Here's what we think could work for you. And I think that's important too, is that they just don't pick on it. Yeah, they're giving you feedback.
Constructive feedback, yeah. And I have some great friends like that who are screenwriters who I can give it to, who'll say, well, this works or this doesn't work, or you know, you could work on this and I trust them. I trust them with my writing because I know they will be completely honest. And I would say definitely that's a bit of advice I'd give to people, is always have that sort of, the people that will be completely honest with you, with your writing, and trust them.
Great piece of advice. Great advice on writing, guys. Play it back. Listen to it. It's great advice on writing. Okay, let's move on to filmmaking.
Okay.
let's move on to your producing side.
Yeah.
When and how did you get yourself into the craziness that we call filmmaking?
It's a crazy world.
It's a crazy world. Seriously, it's nuts. I was up half the night last night because of budgets. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know many producers that get a lot of sleep. Yeah. I think I got into it. I'd written a short, and I really just wanted to make the short. I'd just come out of uni. I really wanted to make it. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to produce this myself. And so I did. I produced it, and then it was a lot of work, but it was work that I liked because I'd come from a business background. I'd been managing a business, and it is a similar thing, producing. It really is project managing. And so I produced it myself, and then somebody else who had worked with there said, you did a really good job for your first time. Will you produce something for me? So I did. And then it was kind of just meeting people through that and then producing their things. And then my friend Ian, who I still work with Ian now, we put together a sort of, not a company, we put together a team for the 48-hour film project. In that year, we didn't even enter it, but what we decided we would do is we would use the name that we'd had for our team and just build a company, a production company around that name. So we became a limited company, and we started producing sort of corporates and commercials and stuff that were bringing in money. And we were working together because we work well together. And that's sort of, it came from there. And
that's
we produced obviously the feature film together and stuff. So
you did, that's who you did Clique with?
Yeah, that was our company, which is Wildcat Media Limited. That's Ian and I.
That's fantastic.
So we done the feature film, and off that we done some shorts and lots of corporate and commercial, which pays the bills, but doesn't let you have a lot of sleep.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's been really good. And I've got some things coming up this year for Wildcat that I don't really think I can talk about now, but...
Oh.
You know, it's one of those ones where you're like, I can't really talk about it right now.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm not pushing, even though I'd love to hear them. I'm not going to ask.
But that came from just putting together, me and him were going to enter the 48-hour film project right. together under that name. And we decided we liked sleep too much. Wouldn't bother entering 48-hour film project. We would actually just use that team name to build a production company.
That's incredible.
And we got a wee studio in Glasgow. It was a studio share. We shared with another company, and basically we looked after the building half the time. They looked after the building the rest of the time. Studio share. We built it up for there. So it worked really well. And I think that's a good thing. If you work with... people will say, like, you know, I always wondered, when I first started making film, I always wondered, why do people only ever work with a sort of really small group of people? Like, mm-hmm. why do they only work with their friends? Why didn't they not bring other people in? But I think I've got to a place now where I'm like, well, this is the group of people I trust. This is the group of people that I know will do their job and do their job well.
Yeah.
So I get it now. I get why people work in a close-knit team. It's the same with the script writing thing. I only have a certain amount of people I'd give my script to read.
Right.
But I also have a small amount of, like, a production team, like a crew that I would work with happily and bring back all the time.
You know but what? I think that's amazing. Your story is amazing.
I think it's having some bad experiences with other people along the way that makes you sort of keep your team close.
Yeah. Keep those that you work well with and just keep doing it, right? I mean, hey, if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
I know.
You know what I mean?
The people that I work with are a really positive wee group. Like, we will sort of build each other up and encourage each other. And if somebody's feeling a bit rubbish, we'll push them. And, you know, they'll push me. I know that there's people out there that would push me and they would say, you know, come on, what are you doing now? And, you know, if I was sort of sitting back a bit and, you know, and we work well together.
Oh, my goodness. You know how important it is to find people who are positive in this business?
Yeah. Oh, it's
just
really
so important. And you did it.
Yes, but that's been through a lot of finding people that weren't so great to get to a point where you're finding people that are great and that you will work with. And there are so many people that I will work with now that just it's a small sort of group.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to have the sort of people you trust in this industry.
Wow. And it takes a while. It takes a while to go through. You got to kiss a few frogs before you can get the prince or princess.
I think that's where I'm lucky because the people that surround me now are really amazing people. They're really good, positive, hardworking people.
That's brilliant. Okay, so you are the producer on several things. I mean, you produced a feature film called Clique. Yes. I mean, you're doing what people Clique want
huge.
To do. Was it really?
Was a huge challenge. I think Clique took quite a long time to sort of the pre-production, trying to get some money, then the actual production, post-production. During production, when we were filming, my mum died. But I think that was sort of the hardest part. It's just I had to take some time off, you know, because my mum had died and then come back to it. So it kind of, you know, it was. But I think it was good for me to get back into it after my mum died because, well, she wouldn't want me to sit about and be like, oh, my God, feeling sorry for me.
Yeah.
But Clique was definitely a trial. It was definitely. And it was one of the ones that told me who I could and couldn't work with. And, you know, but it's a great film. It's a great film.
I mean, so can you give us a little description of the film, like what it's about?
It's a psychological thriller and it's about a man who he lives a very OCD life. He likes his life how it is. He lives on his own. He works. He does art and he's very controlled. And then he meets an old school friend who is sleeping on the streets and he takes her in. And when he takes her in, local women start going missing, and his whole life, his whole very controlled life, starts to spiral out of control, and he's trying to get control of that life back, whilst hiding secrets of his own, and whilst the local women are going missing.
Wow.
And it's a psychological thriller, but it is really good. It's, I would say, if you don't like a lot of blood and...
Yeah.
You know, it is quite a, it's a thriller. I mean, I was there when the prosthetics were made. I was there when everything, you know, the blood and everything was made.
Yeah.
And even though I still squirm when I see it. Because it does look so real.
Yeah.
There when it was made. But it's on Amazon Prime just now. You can see it on Amazon Prime. And you can buy it on DVD as well.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, you can buy it on DVD.
Okay, see, I didn't look...
just buy it on Amazon.
You know what? I went to Prime, Amazon Prime in Canada, and I couldn't find it. It's not listed on Canada anyway, which is disappointing. But if I can buy a DVD... That's what I'm going to do. People, if you're in Canada, just buy the damn DVD, okay? Cleek, C-L-E-E-K. And I will put a link to it in the show notes so that people can find it. That's awesome. Yeah. So on that film, and we're talking about your role as a producer.
Yeah.
Can you just give people an idea of what that entailed during the filming of Cleek?
Okay, I think mostly... producing is sort of logistics, it's managing the project, but obviously Cleek was an independent film, so basically the producer on that is pretty much everything. I mean, like, everything. Obviously my role was to bring everything together, cast, crew, arrange everything, like budgets, you know.
Really?
Arrange the money. Yeah, I mean, like,
so you had to go out and find the money?
Yes.
No.
Which was not an easy task, but we did get some money in the end. But
can I ask, and you know, you're free to not answer, but can you tell us what the budget was on the film?
$18,000.
Really? Okay, I have to see this film.
But I
really have to see this film, because mine right now, my budget is $100,000. And
we've done it as little as possible. And calling in a lot of favors from people.
Right.
And
right.
A lot of the locations were locations that we knew people who would let us use them. And a couple of locations we did have to pay for.
Right.
But some we never. So that was good.
And of course, that would probably be your responsibility to find those locations and to work it out.
That was my responsibility as well. The budgets, everything, basically making sure everybody was there every day and on time, and making sure that everything ran smoothly.
And of course, it doesn't all the time.
Yeah, well, never, ever. But I think as well on that, I was also AD, caterer, runner, dead body. I was a whole number of things.
Okay, now I really have to see the film if you're in it as a dead body. I just have to see Cleek. So, God, that'd be awesome.
I was
awesome.
A whole number of things in that film. But I am credited as caterer as well.
Okay, and funny, I had put down here that you've on IMDb, you were credited as a script supervisor and a caterer as well. So were you a script supervisor on Cleek as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Holy man! Instead of asking you what you did, I should have asked you what you didn't do, because you did so much.
I didn't direct it. Left that to Gary, he's a good wee director though. And Gary is good to work with. So Gary directed it. Gary wrote it, and he directed it.
Really?
I've pretty much done everything else, other than get up and act in it myself.
Can I ask, where did you find the money? Was it private investors, or did you go for funds through Scottish government? Or
there was a number of things that we tried, Scottish government, and it just they won't help independent film. They just won't. It's so
difficult, isn't it?
We had a fundraising night that. It raised a lot of money. We raised a lot of money for that fundraising night. We had sort of bands, a burlesque act, a comedian. Yeah. Again, that was us calling in favours. Bands we knew and stuff like that who'd come and done that. And we had a raffle, and we had a big sort of launch night, which brought in quite a bit of money. We had a private investor, and we had some crowdfunding.
Wow. All and for £18,000, right?
Yeah. It was hard work.
Wow, that is That's going the extra mile.
The hardest thing is crowdfunding. Crowdfunding is a full-time job in itself.
So how did you go about crowdfunding then? Tell us your experience with the crowdfunding.
I think we were really wary about crowdfunding, I think, but we got to a point where we were like, well, we have to give it a try.
Yeah.
So we put together the sort of crowdfunding, and we basically had some really good perks and stuff as well.
Right.
I would say just have some good perks. Don't have regular perks that people are just going to scroll past.
It's like, what would that be though?
Yeah, well, we had sort of, we really good things. Like we had some very bloody perks and stuff. I know that sounds really terrible. We did have that Days on Set as well, which went really well. We had people who were sort of interested in seeing how a set worked, who'd come on set and stuff. And we had one wee man who we got really amazing feedback for, and he would just come and take notes on set every day.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he was really nice. So we had some perks like that people really liked.
Yeah.
I would say definitely try a bit harder with your perks. I see a lot of people that are like, we'll give you a social media shout out and stuff like that, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, but try and use your imagination a bit.
Yeah.
If you're, because it's a lot of competition.
There's a lot of competition for crowdfunding.
I think the very first crowdfunder I've ever done was many, many years ago, and I got over my target. I only wanted a couple of £1,000, I'm sure. Right. But I got over my target in only a few days. But the reason for that was because crowdfunding wasn't as saturated then as it is now.
Right.
Nobody was really, it was like this new thing, and it was easier to do, but now it's so saturated, you have to work hard at it, you have to promote it, you have to be on top of it.
Constant, isn't it? It's a constant thing. Yeah. So you're reaching out on your email lists of people that you know. Yeah. There's social media that you're constantly going out on social media. Because what was it? Somebody said to me that people have to see something more than 3 times before they react to it. So that means you really have to hit social media hard.
Absolutely. And what works well, I think, with crowdfunding, I've found, is videos. People like to actually see who they're investing in, like sort of short videos of maybe the director talking or, the producer or the writer or whatever. They like to see that, or some sort of behind the scenes or, little things like that seem to help in crowdfunding as well.
Well, I got crowdfunding coming up just for the concept trailer. That's what my crowdfunding is going to be. That's crazy. And I'm already, I'm trying to build an audience for that. And the crowdfunding isn't until July. So I'm starting now. It's got to be now. I'm with you. It's a full-time job.
It absolutely is. I mean, you have to be on it all the time.
Man. Well, so not only did you do all these other tasks on the film, you also did the crowdfunding. Oh, my God. Did you ever sleep? Ever?
Not during Cleek.
No. Oh, my God. It sounds to me like you had an amazing experience, though.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a brilliant experience. I've learned so much from making that feature that I would say anybody, make your feature. Absolutely. If you just do it, don't be saying, oh, what if this, and what, make it, make your film.
Yeah. You know and that's what I preach on this show. You've probably heard me talk to people, and it's like, whatever camera you have, get your ass out there and do some shooting.
There's no real excuses now because the technology's there. You've got a phone. You can use a phone.
Tangerine was shot on an iPhone.
Yeah. What was the other one? Unsafe. There was a film called Unsafe. Was that Steven Soderbergh, maybe?
Oh, really? See, there's one I have to look up.
He made a film that was actually cinema released, and he shot it on phones.
On phones. Holy mackerel. But it's there.
There's no real excuse now to not make film.
Yeah.
It's there. You can make it. Just go out and make it. So that's what I would say.
Beautiful. How did you keep your film's budget tight? Because like you were saying, you wanted to do this on a shoestring budget. And you did. Like £18,000. That's nothing to sneeze at. But it's really, that's pretty damn low for a full feature.
Yeah. But that was writing tight budgets for every day. Writing a budget and saying this is how much each day is going to cost and how much people are going to have like an expenses and stuff. There was a few incidents when people were trying to say that their expenses were a wee bit more than they were, but I was really on that, and I was saying to them, if you get fuel, if you want your money back for your fuel or
for your petrol.
Travel expenses, you bring me the receipt. You bring me the proof that that was it, and we will cover you for that. But if you bring me a receipt for a week and you've been here one day, you're not getting the week's worth of petrol and stuff. Yeah. So I think you have to be on top of that. You have to be checking that. You have to make sure that nobody's trying to.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that people are trying to do that, though.
It is sad. I mean, it really is, but you do get people that do it.
So, and you mentioned too that you were calling in a lot of favors and you were trying to get sites for free. And I mean, that would keep the budget down too, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was no sort of big fancy sites or anything. There was no sort of big locations. I mean, most of it was shot in flats and pubs and, you know, stuff like that. And we knew some people that owned bars that we could shoot in. We knew someone that knew that owned a nightclub who let us have our fundraiser there and let us shoot there.
Man.
We got to film in a storage container facility, an actual storage container, and there was a whole cast and crew in one tiny little storage unit in the middle of summer when it was roasting and smoke pellets, and it stank, and you could see the door opening, and then we'd all just be gasping for breath. It was, you know, we had to take what we had to take.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, like you said, it's shoestring.
Yeah, absolutely. And also we had, there was a scene where it's set in a freezer of a sort of tannery, you know, like a butcher.
Yeah.
So we owe the sort of carcasses swinging and stuff.
Oh, boy.
And we actually were fortunate enough to get that free of charge. And it was just kind of a bit of going to people and saying, look, this is what we're trying to do. This is why we're trying to do it. And basically just being nice to the people.
Well, you know what? That's one of the most important parts of filmmaking. And I'm going to say it again. I've said it before. Don't be a dick. You got to be nice. Be nice to people and you'd be surprised what you can get.
And there's no reason not to be nice to people either. We had a whole scene where we had a double-decker bus that we needed to drive up and down the same street all day just so we could get takes, you know, with the bus.
Yeah.
And we managed to blag the double-decker bus plus driver plus have the council seal the road off for a day. And the driver of the bus company even took us to our next location with all our equipment.
You've got to be kidding me.
I mean, it really is just being able to speak to people and know that, just be nice to them, I guess. Yeah. Just speak to them and explain what you're trying to do and the sort of budget you're trying to do it on, you know.
Yeah, you know, it sounds to me like we're still talking about keeping your budget tight. I think that starts on the page too, doesn't it? I mean, when you're writing your script, you don't want to write all these special effects and you know, airplanes and helicopters and, like, you know, a bombing run or something. It's, you got to keep it simple. And that's what it sounds like you did with Cleek.
Yeah. If you don't have a big budget, then keep it simple is what I would say. It was simple. It was simple locations.
Right.
Simple costumes. The only sort of huge costume that we had to go out our way to get was a pregnancy suit.
Oh.
Because one of the characters was heavily pregnant. And the local youth theatre group gave us a pregnancy suit. I know, which is great. And I think everyone on set had worn that pregnancy suit at some point. Even the males, not just the females, even the males had been walking about in this pregnancy suit at some point.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
We had a stills.
You have fun, right? That's the thing.
It was great fun.
If you're not going to have fun, why do it?
Well, that's it. We had a stills photographer, Sonia, who had the pregnancy bump on, and I took a picture of her and I posted it on Twitter. And a pregnancy website thought she actually was pregnant and retweeted it. But she comes to us like the week later and she says, oh my God, the doctor just told me I really am pregnant. And I was like, oh my. So she came in and she put a black wig on and I was like, don't put anything else on. Just don't even put anything else on. So she found out she was pregnant after running about in the pregnancy.
After running about in this.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing. You know what it sounds like too, to keep the budget down? It's like making a list of things you have and can use in the film.
Yes.
What friends will do things, and do I get this camera? Can I get this location? This thing, like the club that you talked about, like that's amazing stuff. So if you make that list before you even start writing, then you can make sure to keep that budget tight when you have all those things in place.
But I think it's like you said, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
If you're a good person in general and you know people, the people are willing to help you. I mean, they are. If you get on well with them and they know that you're trustworthy and that you're all right, then they are willing to help you. I mean, people bring their own equipment. We had, wow. I mean, most of the costume was like my clothes or some, you know, like clothes that we took from my wardrobe or somebody else on set's wardrobe, you know. The makeup artist, although we covered the makeup artist's expenses for some makeup and stuff like that, she went above and beyond as well. She's amazing to make sort of. But again, we helped her. I helped her. I learned on that set how to make skin.
Really?
That's ridiculous. And I learned how to make fake blood. I mean, it really was just us all pitching in, making it work.
Sounds to me like a producer is just a jack of all trades.
On an independent film, the producer definitely is. I mean, I've worked on sort of productions where there's been a budget, right. And my role is far less than it is on an independent film.
Right.
And an independent film, I'm everything. But on a budgeted film that does have some money behind it, then I really am just the producer. I'm logistics. I'm just making sure that everything runs how it should.
Right.
And just organising. Then you go to indie film and it's like, no, you have to do everything to make this work. Which you don't mind, actually.
It's fun, right?
I had a lot of fun, so it's fine.
So what is the main talent that you think a producer has to have to succeed at being a producer?
Patience. Ooh. Have a lot of patience. Mm-hmm. But a lot of organisational skills and being able to think on your feet. If a problem comes up, you need to be able to sort it. And you need to be able to sort it quickly.
And it's not always about, you can't throw money at everything.
Yeah.
Right? You have to think on your feet.
I would say that's something a producer has to have a skill at, being able to think quickly and on their feet and be able to deal with every problem as it comes up. Because problems do come up. If you're shooting at 8 a.m. and somebody phones you at 7:45 and said, they can't be there, you have to be able to sort that quickly.
You're
cancelling if you're shooting, and that's putting you behind. So you need to really be able to have backups for everything as well and think quickly.
Oh, man. Just the thought of that happening would just kill
me. I've had it happen.
You're kidding me.
Oh, yeah, I've had it happen.
Oh.
I think you have to learn. You learn for that. And again, just as long as you have a backup and you can sort that, then it's fine.
Yeah. It's a lot of thought going into something like this.
Yeah.
Just so much thought, making sure that all your T's are crossed, your I's are dotted. It's just logistics, as you were saying. But then a monkey wrench can be thrown in at any time.
Yeah, and you have to deal with it, and you have to deal with it quickly, or the whole thing can fall apart.
So I was going to ask what advice you'd give somebody interested in being a producer on any kind of film, short or feature or documentary or whatever. What advice could you give somebody who's trying to start out?
Can I say don't no, it is a lot of work, but it's a good experience. So my advice would be prepared for a lot of work. Prepared to have to deal with everything, and be prepared to take the blame when something goes wrong, even if it's not your fault. The producer will get the blame. So you have to kind of be thick-skinned. It happens a lot, but you have to have a thick skin, I guess. I mean, just this week, I worked with someone quite a few years ago now, and it was this person's fault that everything fell apart. And that person blamed everyone except for themselves.
Oh,
and now I haven't heard anything from that person for a few years until this week, when they sent me an email saying, I've had a few years to think about this and I'm really sorry and it was my fault. I'm sorry that I blamed you. So that would be my advice. I would say, be thick-skinned. Be prepared for the fact that everything, you get the blame for everything if you're the producer, even if you haven't done anything wrong.
It falls on your shoulders.
But also be prepared to work hard and be really organized.
Fantastic advice. Yeah, you got to have a good work ethic in this whole business, really. And it goes for producing as well. You got to be able to really grind it out. Like, it's a grind. It must be. If you're like, your days must be super long.
Yeah, I mean, not so much just now because I'm focusing more on writing than producing right now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, as a producer, you can have long days. You can be working when everyone else is in their bed sleeping. You're working, you know, it seems like a lot of work, but when the project comes off and you see it at the end,
yeah,
that work's actually worth it.
It's all worth it.
Yeah, wow. So
that's brilliant. So listen, you probably don't sleep very much anyway, so why not add radio personality to your resume? So yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your afternoon, your Monday afternoon gig that you do that I know about?
Okay, so I do the art show on Pulse FM in Scotland. Yeah. That's 98.4 FM in Scotland. I do the art show. It's a two-hour live show on a Monday afternoon. Basically, we have various guests. You've been one of them.
I have.
And we talk about filmmaking, theatre, music, local arts events. I have a guest every week. I'm the host. I'm also the producer and tech and everything else on that show. But I host that show as well, and it's a good show. I've been in a couple of weeks. That'll be a year since I started with that show.
Wow! Congratulations. I know,
so that's like a whole year of doing the live show. But it's a lot of fun. I like the radio. Every single week before I go live, I'm always nervous about going live. But as soon as the mic's on, I'm fine.
Really?
I'm talking, I'm fine. It's fine. But I think I'm nervous right up until that point where I have no choice but to talk. And then I just waffle a lot of rubbish and people have to listen to me for 2 hours.
No, it's not rubbish. Trust me, it's not rubbish. I've been on the show and it was a wonderful experience. So thank you very much for that. You know, thanks for being here too, because you've given a lot of great information. Now, we're down to the big three, the final three questions I ask every guest that comes on the show. So here we go. What is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made and how did you overcome it?
Being too trustworthy, I think, is one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made.
You are not the only one to say that, by the way.
Being too trustworthy, I would say I'm a lot more guarded now. And wow. That's how I've overcome it. I've just kind of kept my circle small. Wow. But I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I've made, is to be.
You are not the only person who has said that. That you know, you have to be really careful about who you trust. But the problem is, you don't know who to trust until you're in business with them. You're in bed with them. And then you go, uh-oh, wrong choice.
The problem with me, I think, is as well, I like to see the good in everybody.
So do I, though. I do, too.
So I think, for me, that's been a big learning thing, is that I can't trust everyone. Not everybody is as trustworthy as I'd like them to be.
Oh, man. Well, okay. What is the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
Do it. Just do it. It's what I would share with anybody. Get out and do it.
That's fantastic. Again, you're like, you're preaching to the choir, sister. This is exactly what I've been telling people.
Yeah. I mean, we're all good at making excuses and saying, well, I would like to, but this reason and that reason, why not? Don't have a reason, just go and do it. Even if you take your phone and some of your friends, then build for that and you can learn and you can keep improving, but just do it.
Fantastic. Listen to this woman. She knows what she's talking about. Okay, name a film that inspired you.
Oh, my God, there's so many.
Okay, name three.
Oh, God. Okay, inspired me. I don't know.
Well, it can be inspired you in life or it inspired you as a filmmaker.
Inspired me as a filmmaker, I think, just because, more so as a writer, because I would like to write about this. Do you know the film Dogma?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Dogma, I would love to write something, an adaptation, a Bible story or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something I've never done yet. But I think Dogma, I saw that and I was like, I would love to be able to write something like that.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing film when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's character-driven and great dialogue, fantastic dialogue in that film.
Oh. I love something character-driven as well. So I think probably that I would love to write something like that.
Wow. That's inspirational. Anything else? Just a favourite film.
Off the top of my head.
No?
Off the top of my head. You've caught me. I'll probably, when I stop speaking to you, I'm going to have like 10. I'm going to be like, oh my God.
That's all right. Although, don't worry about it.
Recently, we did watch, do you know the film Seven Samurai?
Yeah.
Apparently, you can learn everything you need to learn about filmmaking
from
for that.
Seven Samurai.
And actually, that's quite true. It's like 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's a long film.
We watched it in two blocks. We watched it one day, half one day and half the next. But you can learn loads for Seven Samurai.
Wow.
I mean, it was done in like, what year was it done? 1938 or something?
Oh, it was done a long time ago.
A long time ago. And it's black and white, but you can learn loads for that. So I think, I mean, I only watched that a few weeks ago. But
Seven
I think
Samurai.
I've learned a lot from
that. I haven't watched that since I was probably in my 20s.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. I watched it on one of those, you know, those old VHSs that came in a double because it was so long.
Yeah.
It was one of those. Like it came in two ones. Yeah, it was a long time ago that I watched that film. A long time ago.
That is a good film for filmmakers that want to learn about filmmaking.
Oh, well, thank you very much. See, now I'm going to have to go back into it and watch it again. But first, I have to watch Cleek. Yeah. I have to. Okay, where can people find out about what you're up to?
Okay, so you can get me on social media, mainly Twitter, because I'm not great at Facebook. But on Twitter you can get me, and it's at Littleson114. And you can get me on Instagram, which is Christina Littleson.
Right.
I do have a website, which I am going to update. I promise I'm going to update it. And it's just wildcatmedia.co.uk.
Okay. This is beautiful. Oh, man.
You can actually see some of my work on there as well. Like, there's, again, perfect. It needs updated. It's been a while since the website was updated.
Perfect. But, yeah. And I will put in the show notes a, I'm gonna put a link to Cleek where you can buy it or rent it or whatever. Okay. Because I'll find it, and we'll make sure people get a look at it. Oh, Christina Littleson, you are amazing. This was wonderful interview. This was a wonderful conversation. People have learned a ton from you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking and on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.